find out what's new with Wisconsin Public Radio and give us your two cents during this edition of Mondays with Mike. Wisconsin Public Radio's director Mike Crane is here, as he is often on the first Monday of each month, and our lines are open if you have questions or feedback about Wisconsin Public Radio programming or funding or special events or operations. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and Mike Crane is in studio with us. He is the director of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Well, I wanted to start with a story that was in the publication The Hill a week or two ago. It reported that the Trump administration was considering dramatic cuts that would include the elimination of the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities, and privatizing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which, of course, funds PBS and NPR, and public broadcasting. Mm-hmm. So this has led to some concerns as to what this is going to mean. I've had some listeners post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, is this true? What's going on? What does this mean? What can you tell us, Mike?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, a clarification. You mentioned that CPB funds NPR, but that's really only true in an indirect sense, because the grant that comes out from the CPB actually goes to stations first in the form of a community service grant. And we're required to spend a portion of that on national programming, but that could be from PRI, NPR, APM, all the other alphabet soup of national programs as well.
So the funding comes to a local station like Wisconsin Public Radio, and then the local station like Wisconsin Public Radio could buy an NPR program, but it doesn't have to.
That's exactly right. And, and so that's a little bit different than some people have thought. And that's an important distinction, because depending on the station, a very significant portion of funding may be coming from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Now, WPR is a big network, and we have good state support, and we have great support from our listeners and businesses. And as a result, the CPB provides about 7% of our budget. And that's a big number, but it's not as much as it is for some of my compatriots. There are stations even here in Wisconsin who are far more reliant upon the CPB grant than, in fact, many stations in small communities or in Native American communities and so on rely very heavily, like 30, 40, 50% of their funding may be coming from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And so it's a really important part of making sure that all of our country receives public radio, and that's been the goal for nearly 50 years now as far as public radio is concerned. So the answer as far as what the Trump administration is envisioning is not at all clear at this time. We don't have any indication of where they might be going. Where that news came from is that there is a several-year-old report from the Heritage Foundation, I believe it is, that was making that suggestion about the three different arts and culture-related federal institutions, CPB, NEA, and NEH. And so certainly our hope is that the president, as the previous president, will propose funding for public broadcasting. And whether or not he does, we have enjoyed bipartisan support in Congress, and we're hoping that that will continue. And, of course, we're going to be talking to Congress people as we go along. And should there be a need for people to be more concerned, of course we'll let you know.
Yeah. And just to talk a little bit more about that bipartisan support, though. This has happened before, where at least it was proposed, and on a bipartisan basis, that proposal didn't happen.
Yeah. There are times, there's been waves of it over the years. Some will remember that Speaker Gingrich, in particular, had hoped to defund Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And knock on, I guess this is Formica here on the desk here, knock on Formica, knock on wood. Thus far, even when, say, during the Bush administration, the CPB was proposed not to be funded during that administration, still Congress ended up supporting it. And I think it's because the value of public broadcasting in actual communities is so high, and Congress people and senators, they hear from their constituents that they really count on public radio to help them understand the world and to have a respite from the news sometimes, if it's the music programming or the entertainment. And, you know, every year can be different, but that's certainly our hope.
What about those who, when they, we don't know exactly what privatizing the CPB means, but I think the thought would be that public broadcasting stations would just amp up their on-air pledge drives or their fundraising efforts, and would that make up for a cut of the CPB grant, Mike?
No, and there's a reason. One is, several reasons. One is that if you think of it, we're already raising a lot of money from listeners and businesses, and the additional money needed to replace it would be far more in our case than that 7%, because you're sort of raising the last dollar, if you will. And there was a study out that really showed that one of the solutions people think we could do, which would be to run just regular commercials, really wouldn't work. That, in fact, because it would cause us to lose a lot of the kind of individual support, that it really wouldn't work out.
Yeah. And again, we're hopeful that this doesn't come to fruition, but looking at the potential impact of it, should it come to fruition, What does it mean? It means that some programs have to go away, some staff has to go away. What would that mean?
You know, I'm really reluctant without knowing a lot more about, you know, is it a small cut? Is it? I don't want to speculate. I would say, should it occur, we're going to have to look at everything to see where does our budget stand. And of course, one of the things you worry about whenever there's less money is there a reduction in service? And that's what we would be seeking to avoid under all circumstances, because as we've talked about right here in this very same two seats, as we have approached and now are in our 100th anniversary year, it is a story through thick and thin of growing our service to the community. You know, and at the earliest days, it was about figuring out what radio was, and then it was figuring out the internet, and now we're trying to get better at mobile and all that, and also, of course, being in the community. And I think that the need for public broadcasting has been very clear for a long time, and we're really excited to be able to start our second 100 years.
Let's take a call from Josh in Casco. Hello, Josh.
Hello. I have a suggestion. Here's an idea. Heritage Foundation's Daily Signal on January 21st said that NPR, PBS, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting should be privatized. It should be cut without federal funding, but it will continue, and people should not be alarmed. Now, I agree with what you said on the Hill, and this our source also gives us a good point as well. And I think for the pledge drive, we should raise more. Maybe a $2 million goal, maybe continue. So, Mike, what do you think? Thank you.
Well, thanks, Josh, for the question, and perfectly relevant to what we've been talking about. In our experience, simply raising the goal doesn't end up causing us to raise a lot more money. In fact, it's fairly predictable in our experience that we can kind of tell what different methods of fundraising will do, and we try to increase that every year. But the increases will tend to be pretty small compared to, say, doubling the goal for the pledge drive or that sort of thing. And I don't know about Josh, but I know that some listeners like our pledge drives, but in order to raise a lot more money, would we have to double or triple them? I don't know. If anything, we like to try to make them as brief and as rare as we can, because we know as much fun as we have doing the pledge drive, it's not as much fun as being able to stay tuned to hearing Kevin McKinley or whatever it might be.
And speaking of fund drives or membership drives, our winter membership drive is coming up this month, Tuesday, February 21st through Saturday, the 25th. I don't know, anything in particular about this drive, Mike, that you want to highlight?
It's quick, it's basically, we try to do 4 pledge drives a year. This is the first of the year, so we look to kind of kick off the calendar year with strong results. And we also, of course, use other methods as well. We use email, we use mail, and so on to encourage people to support as well. But it just has never stopped being true that the best way for us to find new members for public radio is to go on the air and ask people if they might help us out.
Brad in Minnesota emails, I'm wondering if WPR ever performs something akin to a financial fire drill or some type of financial load test. Do you ever run test scenarios in which present funding is cut unexpectedly by a substantial amount to determine how things go on or how you would adjust?
I wouldn't say that we've done a formal fire drill, but of course it's the subject of conversation every budget year. You know, you just look at how do we think we'll do as we're heading into the next budget year? And there's always the possibility that there would be a significant loss of some kind of income, whether listener income or government income. And I kind of like the phrase that I've heard, which is it's best not to create inadvertent orphans. So what does that mean, right? In other words, it's useful to think about what you might do with substantially fewer dollars, but if you were to put forward, well, we'll cut this or we'll cut that, and it's really only a scenario, that could mean that people fear for their particular show that they wish they would keep or something like that. So we try to avoid that in that sense.
I'm Joy Cardine with Mike Crane. Mike is the director of Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is our February edition of Mondays with Mike. If you have a question for Mike Crane about what you hear or don't hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, or if you have thoughts or concerns about the funding of public radio, or anything else public radio related, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. This is the February edition of Mondays with Mike. I'm Joy Cardine with Wisconsin Public Radio Director Mike Crane, who usually joins us the first Monday of every month to answer your questions and to respond to your feedback about Wisconsin Public Radio. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Bob in Stevens Point is with us. Hello, Bob.
Quite often, we always deal with bias. I'm going to approach it from a different standpoint. I think the problem is when you get guests who come with one viewpoint, one bias. It's as if you give them an hour and you get the same callers who get in their same repetitious sound bites. I wish callers would realize that too. Now, a good example was last week when an AFT teacher person, not a one caller to challenge. And I thought that was more representative of the guest. Two guests at the same time, or it's probably the best with a pro and a con. But if we're going to talk about a news event, let's get the people who can discuss it and not bring their political bias to it all the time. Sometimes that's okay, but that's basically the way I feel.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Mike?
Thanks, Bob. You've actually described some of the dilemmas that we face in designing our shows because a whole number of factors can happen. It may be that the callers that call in aren't the ones to challenge because they're supportive of that particular guest. So it might be Joy's job or whoever's job is hosting the program to make sure that challenging questions are asked. Because you can't always, just because who knows who's listening at any one time, count on that. We do sometimes do shows that are kind of the point counterpoint or having two different views, most especially when we do the Friday news roundups that we do, and actually several different shows do things like that. But that can be challenging, too, for a couple of reasons. Sometimes callers such as yourself have argued that they're just repeating talking points. And sometimes that happens more when you set up the point-counterpoint because they feel a need to defend their point. One thing that we do an awful lot, and I think this is a part of addressing what you're bringing up is that we try to bring experts in various fields to come in as well. That might be a professor from one of the UW system, but it could be from anywhere where they're an expert in that particular topic, and they do maybe have a little bit more of a dispassionate way of looking at particular issues in some cases. So those are all factors, and we do try to get some of each of those in. Thanks for the comments, Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I'm going to expand a little bit on Bob's comments. Because I see posts like this frequently on our show's Facebook page. He was saying that none of the callers had a different point of view than the guest in this particular case, which I don't think I was hosting that particular program. But I also will see posts on Facebook saying most of your listeners are liberal or pro-democratic, and so therefore Wisconsin Public Radio is biased because your listeners are biased. What about that, Mike?
Yeah, I just honestly don't agree with that particular assertion. What I found, in fact, it often happens right here, Joy, with just topics about WPR, that we'll get calls from someone that really hates something we're doing, followed almost immediately by someone who says, wait, I think it's really great. And my experience with callers, with emails, and so on, is that people on the left and the right aren't always happy. And maybe that's the best spot to be in if, and this is what we really try to do here on the Ideas Network especially, if we're really inviting all voices to be in and to have that conversation. Because really deeply, and this goes back to early in our history, our belief has been that if citizens can meet together and figure things out together, and you can do a little bit of that here at the Ideas Network, then our democracy will be stronger. And so that's certainly our effort. And based on our own experience, that seems to happen. People of all different stripes are listening. And any 1 hour might not be perfect. We know that. But over time, we try to make sure that there's a breadth of opinion, a breadth of ideas, and an opportunity to provide feedback to the people espousing those ideas.
Yeah. And I can say that as a host and who works with my producers every single day, there is a great effort that goes forth in trying to provide guests from a wide variety of perspectives and political balance as well. Sometimes a guest will be invited and a guest will decline that invitation. So I feel as though...
That's particularly challenging during campaign season where... some campaigners really just don't wish to appear with their opponent. They might agree to appear on their own.
Speaking of, and we've got some callers too, but speaking of campaign, of all things, we have a primary election this month in February, and we are going to be interviewing the candidates for the State Department of Public Instruction, Mike.
That's right. We've got three candidates in that election: Tony Evers, who's the incumbent, Lowell Holtz, and John Humphreys, and we're working on having all three of them come on and speak with you listeners so that you can get an idea of what they stand for.
And that is a nonpartisan post, but certainly we will...
contested.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Let's go to Samantha in Vernon County. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. My question is this, and there's also a little bit of a comment that goes with this. My question is, does WPR have a code of media ethics that is available for the public to see and bring up concerns? With trust in the media very low and the rise of fake news, this is an important concern. Oftentimes, guests will make statements as if they're facts without citing their source for the information. For example, one of the Week in Review guests, Chris, and I don't remember his last name, stated that an increase in minimum wage would take place immediately. I'm a small business owner. I follow that very closely. Never did I hear any candidate or policymaker state that such an increase would occur immediately. I was very interested in his source of information, which he did not provide. And so I think requiring guests to be able to back up the facts would go a long way in increasing trust.
Thank you, Samantha. And yeah. Let me just say, though, that I wish I was not hosting that particular hour. I don't recall that particular hour. I don't remember a guest saying that there would be an immediate increase in the minimum wage. But in any case, what is WPR's media and ethics code? I don't. That sounds more like we want to. That Samantha wants us to fact check our guests a little more.
Well, so let's unpack. There are a couple of different things there. Number one, we do require that all of our employees follow both a general ethics policy about how we conduct business, and then more specifically an ethics policy related to our journalistic work. And that goes right up to me and even my boss above, that we follow that. And not a bad idea to make it easier to find. It is available on the web, but it's a couple of clicks through. So that's something we'll talk about after we get off the air. But the essence of it is, in terms of our philosophy, not just our ethics, is that belief that I've shared about interest in all kinds of points of view. So that's part one. Part two is guests making assertions that should be challenged. I have a lot of discussion with listeners about this. A really interesting part of figuring out how you do your work on the radio. And one of the things that we find is that here's an example that a listener made such an assertion, and I had a back and forth with another listener about that. And the problem of, say, Joy, you challenging a listener is that they've just called to express an opinion or to ask a question. They may not have all of the detailed facts behind it, and it really can derail the show if you focus on just getting to those facts rather than trying to have the broader discussion. Now, an expert who comes on, you certainly hope that they can back up what they say. And it is our jobs as radio hosts to some degree to try to challenge. But again, it can be very hard to try to challenge every assertion. And the best way we deal with that is that we try to be very prepared when, as program hosts, we get into the seat. We have producers who help us with that. And even so, sometimes it's just going to be hard. And our effort is to try to draw out the truth where it is. Sometimes what happens, Joy, and you could tell us more about this, sometimes we recognize when there's been an assertion made that maybe didn't get challenged or explained fully. That's an opportunity for another show in the future to keep bringing things out.
Yeah, exactly. And we do try to do that. But it did occur recently where a guest had the wrong numbers in a confirmation vote of someone. It wasn't... And somebody sent an email saying, no, that, you know, it was this number, not that number. And so, you know, if you were correcting someone every single time, there might have been a misstatement or something. It also, I think you're right, derails the program.
Yeah. And I think the bigger issue, and this is one that you've heard the statement that journalism is the first rough draft of history. Well, it's a rough draft. And so if there are continued assertions of something that isn't correct, then it is the job of journalism to try to discover the truth and share that truth and then challenge people who assert otherwise.
Right. Thank you very much, Samantha. Well, it is a work in progress.
I do want to add, there is a relatively easy email address to get to a broad statement of our values and guidelines and so on, and it's bami.ux.edu. That's B-A-M-I. That's for our unit of the University of Broadcasting and Media Innovations, and UX for University of Wisconsin Extension. So bami.ux.edu, and you'll see links to our mission, visions, and values, our ethical guidelines, and other resources, and that links to public television and public radio and our learning program, the technical learning, the ICS. So that's all there at bami.ux.edu.
I'm Joy Cardine with WPR Director Mike Crane. Mike is here once a month to talk with you about all things Wisconsin Public Radio. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have Vince who emails, I love WPR, but the new Prairie Home Companion without Garrison Keillor is a dud. I would enjoy more educational programming on the weekends, especially in the evenings. Perhaps one of your networks could have informational programming instead of entertainment. What about that thought, Mike?
I think we'll always have a mix. One of the things that our predecessors talked about is that learning has to be fun, learning has to be accessible, and often take the show, wait, don't tell me. You learn about the news, although you're yucking it up with the guests while you're doing it. And entertainment can often be an avenue into discovering more. an example just in our own history is that we did an awful lot of the school of the air, which was learning, was plays. Enjoying the interplay of the people in the play often was a way to help people discover the truths that that they were trying to teach. I was interested, too, in the comment about the new Prairie Home Companion being a dud. We're keeping an eye on that. I think Chris Thiele, who is the new host, is a real talent. But where's Garrison Keillor? You know, and
it's hard to follow.
Yeah, and I encourage people that have listened for years to give Chris a chance. We're hearing rumblings that they're starting to work on next season already. That would be the season that begins next October. So I'd say the folks at Fitzgerald Theater and the Minnesota Public Radio and all are hopeful that they're going to find their way to another season and maybe a long-time success with the new Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah. We've talked a couple of times now, Mike, about this is Wisconsin Public Radio's centennial year, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to a lot of special events. Let's talk a little bit about some of the special events that are going to be happening, especially when it comes to programs coming to Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, and it looks like our very first special event is probably sold out at this point because when we were preparing for the show, I think it was down to 4 tickets left, and they're probably gone. But I do want to mention it anyway because we're excited about it, and people will get to hear some of it on the air. And that is, to the best of our knowledge, live in Madison. They're doing a program on sort of close to Valentine's Day about love and romance and compassion and the biology of love. And they're doing that with the Center for Humans and Nature that's here in Madison this week. So sorry you'll miss that, but there will be parts of it that will be heard on the air later. And, of course, some people that are listening are probably going, which is great. And then coming up a month from now, so here's a good save-the-date idea, is Michelle Martin is coming to town in Madison, in this case. For Michelle Martin going there, Who Needs College, which I think that's Tuesday, March 7th at Monona Terrace. There's information at WPR.org/100. That's our anniversary site for our 100th anniversary. It's also where you'll see all the different events that are coming. And then in the next month, we've got Tom Ashbrook coming in April. I think it's April 20th. It's also at WPR.org/100. And that's Tom with On Point as part of a nationwide tour that they're doing. So we're really glad that he's dropping in to help us celebrate our 100th anniversary.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you'd like to talk about Wisconsin Public Radio. Mike, in conjunction with our centennial year, we have this new program initiative called WPR Next. Tell us about WPR Next and what's next with that.
Yeah, well, so the idea is that you can't sit on your laurels even after 100 years of success. So what's next in our second century? And we're working on developing new content. And the reason I say that, not just programs, is that it might be a program segment rather than a full show that we develop. Maybe something that is heard on Central Time or on To the Best of Our Knowledge or All Things Considered, who knows. Also, it might be a podcast. Who knows? But our hope is that some of those ideas will be so great that they do become the future programs that are heard on the air on WPR. And so we've got a request for information on a couple of topics that our producers have been looking at lately, and they'd like to know what you think about it. So I'm going to give an email address in just a minute so people can type it or put it on their phone or whatever, and I'll repeat it. WPRnext@WPR.org. And that would be a place to provide input. WPRnext@WPR.org. What do you like about or are interested in science and pop culture, life in Wisconsin? What might we be thinking about that we didn't? That's a great place to let the producers that are working on these new ideas know. And they promise, they may not do every idea, but they promise to read up on every idea that you share at WPRnext@WPR.org.
Hey, and what the heck? If you have thoughts along those lines, you can share them on air, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We have an email from Carolyn who says she heard that Neil Conan has a new show out, and she loved Neil from his Talk of the Nation days. Will the Ideas Network pick up this program? We did, look online, and there's nothing that's apparent that Neil Conan is doing like as a nationally syndicated show, but he is apparently a regular contributor to Hawaii Public Radio.
Yeah, that I've heard, and I have heard that Neil has done a couple of what I'd refer to as one-offs, you know, where he's hosted a special
or
something like that.
Yeah, maybe it's a special, yeah.
Could be. I don't know of any effort for him to do a new daily show or something like that. But yeah, Neil was terrific, and we really missed him when he went away. So we'll look out for that. Thanks, Carolyn, for that email.
Yeah, let's go to Tom in Stoughton next. Hello, Tom.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Very good, Tom. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to compliment all of you for how well you handle people that try to, you know, beat up other people, bash other people. In today's world, all we hear is how people are angry and they want their opinions to be heard, even at the cost of another person's feelings or reputation or whatever. And I just wanted to say how you especially will kind of shut that thing down without making the other person feel terrible, but you don't let it go, and I appreciate that. That makes it a lot more worthwhile for me to listen to.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate that. And certainly we do have guidelines that say we do not allow name-calling on the air or personal attacks. You can attack an issue, but don't attack the guest or, you know. And so I do try to, if somebody's going to go off the rails, try to, as tactfully as possible, take the call off the air and take the initial point, but not necessarily let it go into name calling.
Well, two thoughts. One is simply that in order to understand, it is important not to have just the emotions, but mm-hmm. also the mind engaging. And when name calling happens, it's a lot harder for the mind to engage. And Tom, you reminded me of something that I've repeated in several different contexts, and I think about it in terms of, most often in terms of our donors who contribute to WPR and what they say when they're making that donation. They say they love WPR. And what it reminds me of is that statement from the folks at StoryCorps. They say, listening is an act of love. And so if we were able as a state and a nation to listen to each other better, that would be really good, you know? That would be expressing our love of country, our love of community, our love of each other. And so we hope we foster that every day on the Ideas Network and on our other network as well.
I'm Joy Cardine with Mike Crane. Mike is the director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He is here to talk with you about what you want to talk about when it comes to public broadcasting. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking about programming. We're talking about fundraising. We're talking about special events. We're talking about programming topics you would like to hear on Wisconsin Public Radio in general when it comes to life in Wisconsin or science or popular culture. And we welcome your questions, too. We'll be back in just a moment to take more of your calls. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Wisconsin Public Radio's director, Mike Crane, about issues pertaining to Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcoming your questions forum, your feedback forum, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You know, Mike, I say the Ideas Network a lot on the air. And
yes,
I just
do.
Did. I just did. And I always have. But now we do have a new campaign for the Ideas Network. Tell us why we have a new Ideas Network campaign.
Well, we're hoping to build listening for the Ideas Network. And so starting in Milwaukee, because we get a lot more audience data more quickly, so we can see if it's having an effect. But expanding to the state, we'll have this campaign running, and it's really just a fun set of billboards and things like that. And you do hear some of the ideas flowing from the campaign right here on the air. For instance, listeners who are really pay attention to such things will have noticed that when we're doing the station idea identification now, we'll say the Ideas Network, the world around you. And that's our new motto, if you will, or positioning statements, how they say it in the inside world. And it flows from that idea that we've had for many years, talk about issues that matter to you. And we're all interested in the whole world, and that's from our home all the way to what's happening halfway around the world. So that's the idea of that. And people in the Milwaukee area, I hope they'll let us know if they're seeing the campaign. Just pop us an email or whatever. It's fun little statements. Your favorite subject was all of them.
I love
that. And that's the Ideas Network is where you'd want to listen, because we have so many different topics. And there are six different ones like that that are running right now.
Yeah. And, people might be listening right now to the Ideas Network, and they know that we do some talk shows. Maybe they know that we also have entertainment shows on the weekends. Maybe they don't know there's an NPR News and Classical Music Network. Sometimes it's the other way around. We have two different services on air anyway. Actually, we have three with digital, right?
Yeah, there's a full-time classical station in most every community. You need an HD radio, or you can listen online at WPR.org to that full-time classical channel. It's funny because we're inside the radio. We think everybody knows about all that we do, but in fact, that's right. And another reason for us to do the campaign in Milwaukee is that we've certainly discovered, as have our friends at WUWM, that sometimes people are confused between the Ideas Network and Milwaukee Public Radio. Separate institutions, friends. In fact, we did the Nation Engaged event together just a few weeks ago, where Don Gagne came into town, and that was also broadcast later on WPR. And so helping people to know which they're tuning into and what dial position in Milwaukee, it's 90.7 FM for the Ideas Network. That's important work for us to be doing on an ongoing basis.
Tony in Kenosha called to say that he is a 29-year-old, and as far as he is concerned, there's too much classical music on during the day and that many younger people would prefer other forms of music. Is there any chance that we could change our music format to lure in more younger listeners?
That's a great question. I appreciate Tony thinking about that. Here's the challenge that we've always found. When we've studied our listeners' preferences for music, it's like they're listening to news, they're all together or listening to talk, and then when the music comes on, whatever music it is, they all scatter because people have very different interests outside of the news. And so what we've found is that staying pretty focused, in our case, on classical music and on the weekends, some different things, like Jonathan Overby with Higher Ground has all kinds of world music on Saturday nights, or Dan has folk music on Sunday nights that are really different than the rest of the classical and jazz that's heard. But it's challenging, and thanks, Tony, for the suggestion. We keep thinking about that, but haven't arrived at a good solution.
Yeah, Jonathan Overby, who is the host of the Road to Higher Ground on Wisconsin Public Radio, and his world music is going to be learning more about world music with a special trip, Mike.
He's really has done some amazing study over the years going to other places, and he's let us know he's headed to India, and he's looking forward to what he'll bring back. I know one thing he always seems to bring back is a whole stack of CDs, and he'll use that for his Odyssey program, which is heard right after the news on Saturday mornings on the News and Classical Network, and it informs the music he picks and the stories he tells on Higher Ground.
And this, again, is a trip that Jonathan's taking for his own research. This is not a trip that listeners would join in.
They might, in fact, join in, but it's from another vendor.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
an official WPR trip.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Ooh, I was just going to take a call, and that caller dropped off. Let me take Phil in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call on the program. I was wondering if Mondays with Mike could be aired during Central Time rather than during your show.
Mm-hmm. And because you think that a different audience
different audience, and I would be able to listen to it then more easily.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, thanks for the suggestion. One time way back when, didn't happen regularly, but Ben Behrens asked me to be on At Issue, and I was happy to do that. Honestly, Phil, my main concern is overexposure to me. You know, I really do appreciate your input and the input of everyone who gets in touch with us, however they do that, because we really do think it makes us better to be able to hear what people are thinking. We can mention that to the Central Time folks and see if they'd like to have me on sometime.
I'm willing to share the wealth here, by all means. It should be noted that Central Time does not necessarily have full hours of discussion. They have shorter segments of discussion,
right.
So you wouldn't...
I might be on for 15 minutes instead,
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We have, actually, speaking of Central Time, Donna in Friendship wants to know, why is Central Time repeated? She says that sometimes she listens all day long and then we'll hear a two-hour repeat after Central Time's live broadcast.
Yeah, it's done because 2 hours at the pace they do it is, first of all, very hard. They work their you-know-what off, as does the team on every show. What they've found over the years in public radio is that because of audience churn, many, many people aren't as heavy a listener as Donna, and so they're still finding what they're hearing brand new. And examples of that are quite common, but maybe not on the Ideas Network, Morning Edition and All Things Considered are actually two-hour programs that we, as they say, roll over for additional hours in some cases, especially Morning Edition. And we thought it was the strongest possible program for us to offer in prime time listening in the evening between, 3 and 7 o'clock. So that's the basic idea.
You know, something's coming up this coming weekend that may not be broadcast on the air, but boy, it's going to be a nice break from the winter. It's Garden Expo. Tell us what's happening with Garden Expo, which is primarily a Wisconsin public television event, but public radio joins in the fun, too.
Yeah, we love to be there. And for those that are already sick of winter, and that's some people for sure, or who just love gardening, it's a great event to go to. It's just packed with different ideas and vendors and people, including Larry Mueller. He'll be there Saturday at 9:30 a.m., so you want to get in a little earlier than that in case the lines are long. People really excited to meet Larry. That's at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison, and that Larry session, 9:30 Saturday morning.
Let's take another call from Bob now in Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hello. I have a very mini question that's a couple of years old, actually, but... In the old days, if I happened to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I could turn on, it would be NPR Morning Edition, and now it's BBC. And I wonder why that change was made, and if there's any chance of going back to NPR at 4 in the morning.
The change was made, I think, basically because the thought was that at some points, our listeners to the News and Classical Network might value the different views they can find on the BBC. And it seemed to work pretty well for us overall, Bob, in that early morning slot. And it influenced us to add BBC in the afternoon at 3 o'clock as well. And that's the News Hour program prior to All Things Considered. The idea is simply that it's more, that the reporters and researchers on the BBC look at news differently. They have a different kind of global perspective that we thought many of our listeners would value. So no current plans to change it. It's been that way for a while, as you made note, but we do appreciate the input.
Thank you, Bob. Dennis emails, is there any way to get fresh air on Wisconsin Public Radio sometime between 7 and 11 p.m. in the evening?
Oh, that's interesting, because it is on at 7 p.m., but not, I guess, on the station that Dennis is tuned into. It's on at 7 o'clock on the News and Classical Network, and it could be that Dennis is in Milwaukee, that doesn't say, or in that area, in which case he'd want to find fresh air online at WPR.org. You can listen to our streams live there, and that's a pretty good choice. It's also a podcast if you'd like to listen to it whenever the heck you'd like, and you can find that in the usual podcast tools like iTunes and Google Play.
Yeah. boy, a lot of calls. Kent in Greenville called and wants to know why we have newscasts on 3 times an hour. It's too repetitive, he says, and interrupts the discussion. One newscast at the top of the hour is plenty, according to Kent. And he's just talking about early morning, because that doesn't go on all day long anyway.
Yeah, and the basic idea there is that as people are waking up and tuning in, they'd like to have just a quick check of anything that was really important that happened overnight. And often there is something really important that happens overnight because we have a global news focus. I know what Ken is saying. It seems to work pretty well for us. Our audience has continued to grow since we added that. So is it because of that? I don't think so, but we haven't seen a reduction in audience because of it.
Let's go to Chris in Milwaukee. Hello, Chris.
Hello. I just shuddered when you said that there was a concern that money would be taken away and WHA would be made commercial. What can we as listeners do to help preserve this, to change this? Because I think back, I don't think my radio will move to another station. It's difficult in Milwaukee to get WHA. So once I have it on, it's there. If I want WUWM, I have another radio that I put on. Mm. But what can we do to keep the program public? It would be a horrible thing if this were taken away.
Chris, thank you for the call.
Thanks so much, Ms. Chris. It's great to hear your voice. I'd say that any citizen can do one thing that's always very important, which is to let your legislators, let your congresspeople, your senators, your assemblymen, assemblywomen, let them know just that what you just said, that you value listening to public radio, that it makes your life better, and that you believe they should support it in the form of the votes that they take in Congress or at the State House. And we definitely encourage people to do that always. One of the things that's very impactful for legislators is a phone call. And even more impactful if there's a listening session, which many legislators do around the state, for instance. Go there and just tell them that you think public broadcasting is important. You value public television and public radio, whether it's WPR, WPT, WWM, could be Milwaukee Public Television, could be Radio Milwaukee, whatever it is that you value, let them know that it's important to you.
And speaking of budgets, Governor Scott Walker will be delivering his state budget address to a joint session of the Wisconsin legislature this coming Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. It'll be broadcast live here on the Ideas Network, and we will be doing a lot of follow-up after that as well, I know, on this program and many others. So we'll be following this very important plan to govern spending over the next 2 years in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, and it's the first big step as far as the budget for the state is that the governors propose the budget, and then the legislature debates it in all kinds of ways. They finally come up with what will probably be a somewhat different budget. The governor then has an opportunity to do line item vetoes, and if the legislature still wants to have it happen, they can override those. So it's quite a process yet to come.
So we're almost out of time. Mike, you had some websites perhaps that people could go to get more information on our centennial or on WPR Next?
Three websites quickly. WPR.org/100 for the anniversary site. It's really fun to look at and to play around with. WPR.org/next is the easiest way to get that quick information about WPR Next. And then a quicker link to finding the ethics policies of WPR, go to WPR.org, click on the menu about WPR, and you'll see our ethics guidelines link right there.
Excellent. Well, if all works out, we'll have you back on the first Monday of March, unless Central Time steals you. So thanks. Mike Crane is the director of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program and to Brianne Chasseau as well. This is the Ideas Network.